Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to Garden Better. I'm gardener and horticulturalist Adam Woodhams, and with me is keen gardener, horticulturalist, and Better Homes and Gardens garden editor, Jenny Dillon.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Hey, look, it's that time of year where I reckon we need to have a little bit of a chat about garden gifts. And I think one of the best ways to talk about garden gifts is to think about them from the point of view of our favourite tools. I guess the thing is, when we start to talk about garden tools, it's an enormous range, isn't it? So we're looking at everything from hand trowels to power tools, and they're all part of the garden kit. You know, they're all part of that collective of things that we call the garden tools. And in fact, that's a question in itself. Would we even need garden sheds if we didn't have collections of tools?
I don't have a garden shed.
Good grief, Jen.
You know what my favourite tool is in the garden? I'll tell you what it is, and this is going to be really hard to cater for at Christmas time. It's my hands.
Your hands.
My hands. Gardening is tactile. You use it to feel plants, use it to weed. It's so much of my gardening is done by
hand. Well, it's true. I do agree with you there that gardeners, we are very, very handsy people, but not in that sense handsy. In handsy with soil and plants. You know, you're right. Like, you know, if I'm doing something with
Look
a plant.
Look at my nails.
If I'm doing something with a plant, I will often get my hands in around the root ball, and I'll be feeling where the roots are and what's happening. And I'll do that if I'm lifting something small or large. I'll do it by hand rather than necessarily doing it, you know, with tools to lever it out of the ground. But the fact is, we do need tools for something.
We do.
You can't unless you have very, very a particular manicure, you're not going to be able to prune your roses very well.
No. So secateurs is an essential one.
Yeah, I reckon secateurs, pruners, as they often get called now. They are one of the absolute essentials. And this is an interesting point when you come to buy a pair of secateurs, or if you're going to gift a pair of secateurs, I reckon they're actually one of the most intimate of the garden tools.
Yeah, so I don't recommend you buy gardener secateurs. To me, you know, that's akin to buying a chef a set of knives. You have no idea what they need, and you know, quality is important. All these things.
It's to do with how they feel in your hand.
Yeah.
You know the ergonomics of them is incredibly important, because you can be using secateurs for an extended period of time. It's as simple as that. It's fascinating. I used to manage in retail nursery, and the hardware department of one of the nurseries, we were known for our collection of tools. And we had a very, very wide selection of secateurs, from just budget models through to the absolute top shelf worth, you know, $150+. And some people would come in and they wanted the expensive ones just because they wanted the expensive ones.
Oh.
And I'd say, no, look, you've got to do this. Hold your hand out. I'd open the secateurs, pop them open, put them in their hand, and the first thing you had to do was check that somebody could, with an open hand, they could pull those secateurs closed. Because if you've got to bring your second hand into play, if you're fighting the spring the entire time, they're actually useless. They need to be able to go all the way open.
And
then
the
they
design.
Need to feel comfortable.
Yeah, but also the design sometimes, you have that little clip where it locks. Sometimes it's in the wrong place.
Yes.
It might look pretty, but it doesn't fit your hand.
No, well, that's right. There's a particular brand of very expensive secateurs that although extremely good, and I do now own a pair of them, my one complaint is I hate where the catch is. I don't know if it's the size of my thumb or whatever, but I can never bring the catch in without using my second hand, which I find quite annoying.
That's really annoying.
You want to just be able to clip them and put them away. So the takeaway from that is secateurs, probably not the best thing to be buying people. Now, on saying that too, some people there was people I knew wanted to buy expensive secateurs, but they never bought them. And do you know why?
Why?
They were chronic tool losers.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Well, I am too.
They knew that if they had a $100 pair of secateurs, months time, they're going to be lost somewhere underneath the leaf litter. Mm-hmm. So they only ever bought cheap secateurs because they were effectively buying them as throwaways. So do think about, as you said, your usage and all that sort of thing, because that is very important in how you actually select hand tools. So let's say we don't buy secateurs for somebody. You give them maybe a gift voucher for secateurs.
Oh, that is my favourite gift of all times, is a gift voucher from a major hardware store or a nursery. I just get so excited.
It lets people do their own thing, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, and then I reckon the classic hand tools, I like heirloom quality, as I call it, and that's the sort of stuff that you get to keep for a long time. Mm-hmm. I still have my grandmother's secateurs and I still have my grandmother's hedging shears. Aww. And she passed away 25 years ago.
Wow.
And she was 94 when she passed away and she was a keen gardener. So, you know, they were amazing quality. So look for that quality if you can find it. And you can find it in hand tools. And by that I'm talking about the trowels and the hand forks. And to me, they're sort of like your next thing that are critical in your garden kit. And there's lots of little things too, though. If you want a stocking stuffer for gardeners.
Ah, I'm the one.
Yeah, lots of bits.
Well, gloves, you can never have enough gloves, and different types of gloves as well. So if you want to buy, you know, if you've got lots of roses, then you'd need perhaps gloves that go up to your elbows.
Yeah, the long gauntlet gloves, which are perfect for pruning anything prickly
and
or irritating.
Do you know
what
I have found so difficult to find recently? I've got knee pads. They're so glamorous, I tell you what, when I'm in my shorts and these things around my knees. But you just can't. I don't know where to find them. These ones have been worn ragged, and the Velcro's all worn away. But knee pads. Anyone out there? Tell me where I can get some decent knee pads.
I can tell you. You might have to look in the tradie section because they're like tradesmen's knee pads.
So yeah, but they're those big, thick plastic things.
Yeah, they look kind of like skating knee pads.
No, I just want the little soft ones. But knee pads are really important when you're eating.
I don't find those big ones particularly comfortable, so I use a kneeling pad. You know, one of those high density foam things. I find those quite useful. Except I tend to sort of like use it and then wander away and think, where'd I'd leave it? And then you're kneeling down and you kind of defeat the whole purpose.
That's right.
But there are lots of nice little stocking stuffers like that.
And there's another one is a little, say, a flat ball, not a ball, but a flat pack of twine and cutters because you're wandering around and this little bit of creeper has come astray or whatever. And if you can put it in your pocket with a cutter, small, just immediately fix up the problem.
Mm. Well, there's some great little garden snips. I actually tend to have two pairs of I have my secateurs and a pair of garden snips with me when I'm in the garden. And the garden snips are like little scissors and they get called things like floral snips. But I find them really useful for cutting twine and budding tape, which is the one you use for tying plants up against stakes, smaller plants against stakes. But that old-fashioned twine, I reckon you can actually find that packaged in some really nice ways, which make a really cool gardener's gift and a stocking stuffer. But I like that twine in the garden because it does break down over time. So rather than sort of ending up with this horrible plasticky stuff that doesn't seem to break down, it naturally breaks down or the birds nick it or something like that. And by that stage, that stem has become firm enough to be holding in place anyway. So what do you reckon? You got a couple of suggestions for people that are shopping for gifts for their favourite gardener?
I'd like a really good tool belt.
You can repurpose a tradie's tool belt, you know, the classic carpenter's tool belt, because they come in lots of varieties. I've got a big super duper one I use when I am doing building stuff, which has got, you know, pockets for the Batman utility belt for just about everything.
Yeah.
But then you can get ones that are just basically a pouch and a couple of little hanging hooks, and they are fantastic for gardening. Have you seen the ones where it's actually like a little jacket for a bucket and it slips over the top of a bucket and it's got little pouches and things all around the side. So you carry around your bucket and that's where you put your weeds.
I was trying to imagine it for a moment. Yeah.
No, it's really clever. You can put all your weeds and things as you're going around into the bucket and then all your tools just go in the little pouches around the side.
It's a good idea.
There's lots of stuff out there. Get into your local nursery, have a poke around and you can find some wonderful gifts for gardeners. But maybe, as we said, avoid the secateurs.
Yes.
Well, Jen, it is the time to be dressing the halls and all of that stuff. But in many regions, I reckon you will find that holly is in short supply.
Yes.
Particularly in the great land of Oz. Live holly, at any rate.
There's now, a couple of grevilleas that look like holly.
Yeah, there's a couple that do.
But it's not quite
it's
the
not,
same.
Not holly, really, is it? Now, I reckon we should have a look at some of the classic and more unusual plants that are good ones that people can be using for celebrating the warm season. You cannot go anywhere into any nursery or plant cellar or florist at this time of year without finding loads and loads of vibrant, colourful, gift-wrapped poinsettias, can you?
It's such a horrible thing. Those poor little flowers, they've spent all the past couple of months pretending it's winter.
And that is the point. I'm glad you raised that because poinsettias are a winter flowering plant.
So here they are in the middle of summer, the poor little things, it's just wrong.
Yep. The growers convince them it's winter and they get them looking perfect and then they stick them out in the middle of a hot nursery and we take them home and then wonder why they look sad for the next 2 months.
Mm. Yeah. And then, of course, if you plant them in the garden later on, you're wondering, why is it flowering in the, middle of winter?
That's exactly right. Mm. And people probably don't realise too because they look very tropically, but they're actually normally from dryish regions of Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, I think, quite interesting. And, yep. The toxicity. Now, this is one thing I often hear people say, oh, I won't have poinsettias in my house because they're really toxic.
Well, so are most plants.
It's actually – well, that's a very interesting conversation that I reckon we need to put a sticky note on that one to talk about sometime in the future. Okay. But there's quite an urban myth about poinsettias, and I think it relates to the fact that people have this immediate thing. They see that milky sap, that white sap, and they assume, ooh, must be poisonous because it's this milky white sap. The fact is, yes, some people might react to it, but the vast majority of people do not have any sort of reaction to those plants. Yes, they might be toxic if you ate an enormous amount of them, but they taste terrible.
Awful.
You're not going to eat them. In fact, there was a famous grower in America, and I think it was – I can't remember the name of the company, but they were the largest growers of poinsettias in America. And people always used to ask that when they had tours. They'd say, oh, but they're poisonous and we don't want to have them at our place. And he'd say, no, they're not. And he'd grab a handful of leaves and start chewing on them to prove the point. So they really – look, they're not – as with any plants, use a bit of caution, but reality is you're unlikely to have any issues. But they're pretty easy to care for once you get them home. You know, good light, not direct scorching sun because they have been grown in an artificial environment. Exactly, yeah. But one of the big things is to keep them away from air conditioning vents, not because they don't necessarily like those cool conditions, but it can – that constant – movement of cold air can scorch the foliage. And that is true of any indoor plants. That's one of the big tips with them. And they like to be moist but not wet. And actually, although logic tells you, oh, I better liquid feed them every now and then, you don't particularly want to because that's going to encourage foliage growth as opposed to maintaining those flowers. And important, I think, for us to point out what the flowers actually are on these plants.
Those little tiny white dots in the middle.
That's it. They're tiny, tiny, tiny little things in the centre. And those big colourful parts are in fact called bracts.
Yes.
So they're a modified part of the plant. And it's designed to basically say to insects, come here, look in the centre. You'll find something to eat if you follow the target lines. Mm. So you're not actually looking at flowers when you see those bright bits. Now, what about potted Christmas trees? Love, hate, where do you stand on them?
Either way, I think if you go out and buy the latest edition of Better Homes and Gardens, I've got a whole feature on potted Christmas trees.
Ah, very good.
And there are just some absolutely stunning varieties of trees. And with a bit of careful planning, they can grow into the most spectacular specimen trees.
I think that's a good point. It's much more environmentally friendly because you're not buying a cut tree and throwing it away into landfill at the end of the Christmas period. If you have somewhere where if you want to keep it in a pot, a lot of these
Christmas trees can stay
in a pot for a couple of years. That's right. So you can get very good value out of them, but you will need somewhere at home where you can care for them. It's the right spot, and then you bring them inside come Christmas time. But otherwise, as you said, a lot of them are gorgeous specimens in the ground as long as you have the
and
right
And then you can have your Christmas
conditions.
Tree outside.
Yes.
And you can cover it with fairy lights.
You can. Coloured fairy lights. We could change our spotlights to be red and white for Christmas, Jen, with some green thrown in there as well. You'd love that.
Stop it.
I'll come round and reprogram yours for you if you'd like.
Actually, I don't have a Christmas tree. Well, I do. It's about 10 centimetres high, plastic blow-up.
Oh, very good.
That's it. I haven't used it for about 10 years.
Yes. And so you can just fold that up and stick it in a drawer. That's handy.
I don't know where it is.
I'll buy you one for Christmas.
Oh, no, it's all right.
Hey, what about some Aussie flavour? Because there are actually some very good Australian native things you can use for celebrating Christmas.
Yes. I tell you what, Australian Christmas trees and shrubs are just so underrated and they are so magnificent.
Mm. Well, it's interesting when you look at it. It's if you wanted something that's just a Christmas tree, traditional cone shape, you can in fact get lily pillies pruned into them. Conical shape. And they're gorgeous. You can keep them alive in pots for a long, 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 long time and just reuse them. And the trick there is just to reprune them. It's interesting though, when you start to talk about the different Christmas bushes or Christmas trees, each state seems to have its own version, which gets really confusing because New South Wales has got the Christmas bush, which is the Cerepetalum gammiferum. That's the classic Christmas bush that has the colourful bracts that start with a pinky colour, go white, or is it the other way around? I always forget. But you offer, they're fantastic as a cut flower.
I was just going to say
But if you get them as a cut flower, please make sure you only buy them from a reputable outlet of some sort, because there are people go into the bush and cut them and then sell them by the roadside.
Right.
So please don't do that. But if you're in Victoria, they actually have one of the mint bushes, a Prostanthera, is what they call their Christmas bush. And that one has white, pink or mauve flowers.
And it's perfect for Christmas roast, lamb roast, and mint flower.
I have to say, this is one of those strange things. I love the smell of the leaves of Prostanthera. Mm. Some people go, oh, it's horrible. And I quite like it. They're very pungent.
Yes.
But then South Australia and Tassie, they have Bessaria, which is covered in masses of tiny white flowers. Which
little
is perfect.
Stars. Yeah, it's
little
Christmas stars.
Starry, starry, snowy flowers all over. WA has Annuitia, which is covered in bright yellow flowers, which is
and
WA always likes
perfect.
To do things different.
It's mistletoe. It's one of the largest mistletoes
yes,
in the world.
Yes, that's right. It is too, isn't it? Yes, there's been – they've attempted to get them to grow – as a commercial plant, but they can't quite work out how to make it happen, can they? It's a rather unusual
So head
thing.
Out into the bush, pick some mistletoe if you're allowed.
If you're in a legally in allowed area, of course, we would never encourage people to go poaching plants from a national park or something.
And then you could all start kissing under it.
Yes. That's or anywhere you'd like for that matter if you feel so inclined. Hey, and then up in Queensland, we have
the most beautiful. Go on, tell us.
Yeah, it's an orchid.
I know.
So, So we do things a bit differently up there, and it has a gorgeous spike of white flowers. So it's a wonderful, wonderful different thing.
Do you know what I think they look like? They look like floating angels.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that point of view, but you're very much right. Yeah. And I reckon two underrated ones, which used to be very, very prolific in the bush, but they seem to have disappeared these days, I think because people used to harvest them so much at Christmas time, is the Bland Fortius, which is a terribly bland name.
Yes.
But they're a beautiful lily. And there's Bland Fortia nobilis and grandiflora, and they flower around Christmas time.
They often do. But you know what? I think that's why they're not so popular these days, is because the rest of the year, they just look like little tufts of grass.
Yeah,
or
they
weed.
Do. They do. They look very much like one of the Aussie native grasses, like a lamandra or something like
that. But tinier,
They are gorgeous, but you don't see them in the bush as much. And I think because they've been cut out so much by people,
that's a shame.
Which is very very sad. Very sad. But and in my research, I have to say, Northern Territory and the ACT. You're letting the team down, guys. Get your act together. You haven't got a native plant named for Christmas.
No.
And if there is one, if there is a local one, because there might be something up there in the Northern Territory that they're not telling us about, you send us an email and tell us about it.
But I've asked them.
Have you?
Yes. Okay. I went to the Botanic Gardens up in Darwin and I said, what's your Christmas tree, Christmas plant? No,
nothing.
Nothing.
There you go. And now I reckon here's a contentious one, because I do know that how you feel about giving plants as gift to gardeners. Do you reckon that at Christmas you should take the risk of giving a gardener a plant as a gift? That was a very big sigh, Jen.
Yeah. Well, I don't recommend it, you know, because, you know, gardeners have, they have dreams and schemes and themes, you know, and that plant that you give may not fit that. It may not fit the soil. It may not fit the aspect. Indoor plants, sure, but not for the garden.
Plants are very personal, aren't they?
Very personal.
Yeah, yeah, it is one of those things. But then I reckon it's also a yardstick of how well you know the gardener. Because, Jen, if you were to give me a collectible clivia at Christmas, I would say, oh, you are the bomb, Jen.
Yes, but you and I talk plants all the time. None of my friends talk plants. They just go sort of glaze over their eyes. And if they bought me a plant, it would be wrong, even though I've known them practically all my life. They still don't know plants.
To all of Jen's friends, you need to listen a little more when she talks, and you can buy her the perfect plant gift for Christmas.
Thank you.
So you've managed to sort out your gifts and you've even agreed on some perfect Christmas plans. That means just one thing, time to get down to the serious business of entertaining. Now, you wouldn't take a gardener's word on such an important topic, so we thought we needed to call in the big guns. Dora Pappas is more than someone who knows how to throw an absolute shindig. She's editor of Better Homes and Gardens magazine, an absolute decorating and festive guru, and a foodie to boot. Dora, welcome.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
I am absolutely fantastic and very glad you could join us because, look, don't trust my advice when it comes to setting a table. Denise will tell you that all the time.
I promise I won't take your advice.
Now, look, what it is that time of year where people are getting out there. It might not necessarily be a Christmas thing. It could be a family get-together. It could be New Year's, whatever. It's just that time of year where we all love coming together, isn't it? So from your perspective, what are the essential elements of putting together an outdoor get-together?
Oh, look, for me, let's face it, we're moving into summer. So for me, shade is absolutely important. Now, you may not think of that when you're talking about entertaining, but really you want to make your guests comfortable. So whether it's a pergola, whether it's, you know, a market umbrella or whatever it is you've got, make sure you have shade. Okay?
Yeah, I think that's one that really gets forgotten about. Yeah. I tell you a great one that I've found that they used to be really expensive is the cantilevered umbrellas, you know, where they have the central post and the offset umbrella. Because you could move them around with the sun.
So absolutely.
You're not sort of messing around. You just undo a click thing and you turn it around and bang, you've got sun protection.
Absolutely. And you don't need to stick a bolt in the wall or anything like that as you do with shade cloths. But if you've got a shade cloth, fine.
Yeah. And, well, actually, I'll tell you a funny thing. A place we owned a few years back, we were looking at shade cloths as a solution. And I started talking to somebody about it from the perspective of, you know, what would I need to do with a post here and a post there? And ended up finding out that because I would have needed technically what were engineered posts and I was attaching it to the house itself, I would have needed council approval.
Oh.
Yeah. Really? And it would have needed to have been engineered and had council approval.
Now, that's a tip.
Yeah, so just do check these things, peeps,
absolutely,
before you go whacking up some shade. So, yes. Hey, look, one that's really in now are those big bench seats for outdoor dining. Where are you with those?
Are you talking about the ones with a back or the ones
without
a back?
No, the ones that are just like a classic bench, you know, no back and...
I'm okay with them. Now, it sort of depends who your guests are. I think they're fine in terms of they give you a little bit of an informal air to them. And let's face it, if you're entertaining outside, it's all informal. And they tuck neatly usually underneath the table. Mm. So they're great space savers. But I'd also say that you should have some chairs with backs for, say, people who like to actually lean back in a chair. And you would be surprised how many people, and I've had some recent evidence of this, who say, haven't you got a chair with a back?
Yeah.
So, and that goes for bar stools as well, because these days you've got those high top bar tables.
Yeah, and after a couple of brown mineral waters, they might be forgetting that there's no back.
Exactly. Yes, you don't want people tumbling backwards.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But now, I saw a design the other day that was quite a clever one, where down one side of the table and on each end they had the classic backed style individual chair, and then on the other side they had a bench. And I thought that's actually a clever way to do it, because, you know, particularly if you've got a lot of kids, the kids can all pack into the bench side, and then us oldies that like that support can have the proper seats on the other side.
And kids, you'll find, are a little bit more agile and can step over the bench. And, you know, if they've got the middle seat, it's okay. They can get in and out quite quickly, whereas the rest of us are sort of going to shuffle along and shuffle everybody else along. So that would be my only rider.
So maybe mix and match is the way to go there.
Absolutely.
Now, when people bring the spread out, you know, lots of food, whether it's come off the barbie or whether it's out of the fridge or whatever the case may be, are you a on the table kind of person, or do you reckon it's better to have a big buffet and then people can fill up and go to their respective seats? Where do you reckon the best way to go is?
I'm a buffet kind of gal. I do like to decorate my table, so I'll have a centerpiece, nothing that takes up too much room. The reason I don't like putting all the food on the table is because you find you start getting cramped and you're not actually enjoying your food. You can't spread out a little bit. You're passing food around, whereas if you've got the buffet, people can just get up and take whatever they want, whenever they want. They can go back for as many refills as they want, and it's easy.
And in my experience is the sausages you want, you know, the super spicy ones that came from the special butchers, the continental butchers, are always up the other end of the table.
Exactly, exactly. And it either means you have to get up and go and get it yourself, or tell lots of people to pass them along the table. So, like I said, buffet for me, but decorate your table.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask. I bet you're a fan. You're not a paper plate and plastic fork person.
No.
Yeah, you like to do it properly?
Yes, I like it. I like to do it properly. Yeah. I don't like the paper plates and I don't like the plastic plates. They have their place, but I think these days you can also look to melamine plates, and the melamine plates are absolutely fantastic, both for kids and for older people. And when I say that, they come in fabulous designs. So they're not your plain white that you used to get. Now you're hard pressed to tell the difference between
them. Yeah,
yeah, between China and
I've noticed that even from places like Aldi, they'll have specials on them, and you look at them, and you think they absolutely rock. They're perfect for outdoors. Yeah. You know, some great designs, very contemporary. So,
and you can also get your glassware to match. It's not glass, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
Now, this is a very serious topic that I don't think gets discussed enough when we talk about these outdoor eating type of situations, but 'tis the season for food poisoning. Isn't it? I mean, really, you know, you've got to be aware of this, because the temperatures are higher. We've got a lot of bugs and things flying around. Have you got some simple tips for safe food handling when people are getting their lunch out or their dinner out there?
I think there's a few things. I think you should always have food covers, especially if you've got a buffet. So that's really important. And there's some lovely decorative ones out there. Failing that, a nice clear cloth over the top. When I say clear, something that, you know, is fairly transparent, so you can see through it, so you can see the food, but cover it so no flies. Okay, that's really important. I think once the meal is over, refrigeration, just get it out there. Don't think you're just going to leave it to stew in the sun and then think you're going to eat it later on that night or the next day. But during the day also, it's worthwhile having eskies around. So anything that's likely to go off, like your seafood, keep it in the esky. So they're probably my three top tips.
Yeah, and you can put stuff on beds of ice too. So you can have a bigger platter with a smaller platter on top and have a bed of ice and help to keep things cool that way. And
you like oysters, don't you?
Yeah. I have been known to lean towards a bit of seafood every now and then, Dora.
I do like my prawns, I have to say.
The other one too, I was at something a while back and they'd set the buffet up absolutely beautiful, but they hadn't thought about the fact that by the time everybody was getting around to it, the sun was falling on it, and it was like, ew.
Yuck.
So that's one to be aware of too. Yes. Make sure it's well and truly in the shade. Now, this one is an interesting one too, and it kind of relates to what we were talking about with that bench seating. Are you someone that likes to have that big, classic, long, lazy lunch and stay at the table, or do you reckon people should have a spot where you can all, you know, decamp to some comfy chairs and other places?
I think it depends on the people, and you do tend to find that people break away. So you'll find some will go off and have a snooze, others will go and settle in front of the telly. You mentioned Boxing Day. You've got the Boxing Day match.
That's it,
yeah. All the blokes are in there.
Yeah, going into a food coma and
exactly,
watching whatever's on telly.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then others stay at the table. So I think what you need to do is offer options for people so that you don't sort of try and keep them where they don't want to be. Mm. They don't all want to be at the table. Off they go. But personally, I'm a big, long, lazy lunch kind of girl.
Yeah. And if you've got comfortable chairs at the dining table, then it's, And it's funny too. I think sometimes when you give people the option, they're more inclined to comfortably stay at the table.
Exactly.
But if you don't give them the option, they sort of sit uncomfortably and want to move somewhere else. You know,
exactly.
It's a weird thing of human nature, I think.
But when you said comfort and staying at the table, I think you touched on something there. So make sure you've got nice seat pads or cushions, either for the back or for your sitting on, because that just extends the period that you're likely to spend outside.
Well, and the outdoor cushions now, I mean, it wasn't too long ago they were horrible, scratchy, you know, coarse plastic things, but they're actually – there's some very, very nice outdoor cushions now.
There are some fabulous outdoor cushions out there that and there's ones that you can buy from the shops, and you can even buy outdoor fabric these days and sew up your own.
And create your own.
Yeah,
that's handy. Yeah.
And the designs are amazing, absolutely amazing. We've got something coming up in the magazine for our summer issues, and
very good.
Oh, I'm just in love with these fabrics. There's one in particular.
And what do you reckon about lighting? Are you big on candles? Do you like fixed lighting?
I love candles. I think candlelight is really it just gives you an atmosphere that nothing else. You just can't buy it. But if you are going to use candles, I always say make sure that they're in glass, so like hurricane lamps or in the vase type vessels.
Yes. Yep.
And that's because breezes do spring up. And you don't want to be worried about the light going out.
Yeah.
So that's important. I love fairy lights.
Ah, very
I'm
good.
A big
very good.
Fan of
you
fairy
can
lights.
You can come back again, Dora.
Oh, can I? You like fairy lights too.
Jen's looking at me across the studio with a very evil look, just over your shoulder there, Dora.
I know, and I said that on purpose because I know Jen's not a fan of fairy lights, but done my way. The proper way.
Done well is
done
what it
well
comes
is
down
what
to.
I'm saying.
I think that is a point, that these things can be done in a kitsch way or they're overdone.
Absolutely.
But done in a discreet and subtle way. They can be lovely.
Well, they just add magic.
I was going to say too that the LED replica candles now, there's some very, very good ones of those, and they're actually out of a solid wax-like material.
Yep.
So they can be a great way of avoiding that problem of, you know, the exposed flames with kids and worrying about it blowing out. You just got to remember to recharge them or put batteries in. But apart from that,
do you know, I even like the big string lights, you know, with the bigger globes. They're fantastic.
Yes, we've got a big set of those festoon lights at home, and it took me a while to find a nice long one because I found a lot of them have smallish globes and they're only, you know, sort of 3 meters long. And I finally managed to find, because our outdoor area is quite long, and I finally managed to find a string that was about 12 meters or something long.
Oh, good.
So that let me put a good few sort of, you know, carnival style sags into it. And they just add such a nice atmosphere to the place. And they're LED as well, so it means they're low power consumption. And you can, you know, have that very soft white light that's that really nice, warm,
well, that's
cozy
what I was
going
to say.
Feel.
If you're ever going to use outdoor lights, make sure it's warm lights. Well, that's my tip. It's awful. Well, I need to be very careful what I say. Some people might like the blue light.
It's a bit stark.
It's a bit stark. I think the warm light just adds so much more ambience. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, before we let you go, what is a dish that you reckon is a must-have for the Christmas feast, that, you know, or for that seasonal feast, for across the period? What's something that you just absolutely have to have on the table?
Do I have to stick to one because I've got three?
Okay, give us three.
Okay.
That's even better.
Your glazed ham. Got to have your glazed ham.
Yes.
Okay, absolute winner. And you can graze, you know, for 3 or 4 days on that afterwards, maybe even longer. I think prawns.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Just a winner. Yeah. Lay down mazair. If you've got the time, you can peel them for people. Otherwise, you know, make sure you've got lots of little water bowls and ice and lemon floating around. And the other thing is a pav. can't go wrong with a PAV.
I still love a good PAV, yes. Aren't they? Realistically, they're very simple too, aren't they? They are a good dish, and they're just so.
You can do two things. You can either make your own from scratch, and some people might think they're a little bit hard. They're absolutely not. They're so easy, so easy to make and to decorate. All you need is cream.
Cream and fruit.
Cream and fruit. Now, you cannot go wrong. But if you think you can, just buy the base made from the supermarkets and you'll be fine. And then
fill it up.
Decorate to your heart's content.
Yeah, and the beauty of the PAV is that basically there's no restrictions on what you want. It's whatever your taste is, that's the fruit you put into
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
That's the way you go.
I'm a big mango and passion fruit lover.
Oh, look. Dora, you are coming back again. There's no which way about it. We love the same PAVs. You like fairy lights.
That's it. And I don't mind bench seats either.
You don't mind bench seats. Well, Dora, thank you so much. I now have no excuse whatsoever for making a mess of my Christmas and summer entertaining. So thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Gardening by the Moon with Milton Black.
Hi, Milton. How's it going?
Oh, busy again, Jen, at this stage because Christmas is upon us and there's still time to jump into the garden and do lots of little works and things like that. And particularly, you know, this couple of days before Christmas, I mean, everybody's out shopping and going to town doing their things, but it's still a good time to pop into the garden, especially on the 24th and even up to Christmas morning on the 25th.
Excellent.
But it's not a planting time, so you don't have to worry about getting out there and planting because the moon is in its last quarter at the moment, up until the new moon on the 26th, that's Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. So this period, if you don't want to go into the garden, that's fine, but if you want to just go in and do a quick spray around the place, a little bit of fertilising, get rid of all the bugs and things of that nature, no planting, just tidying up. And also, this is a great time to harvest things too. So if you've got some nice vegetables there that you want to bring up for Christmas or for the festive season, you just go out and harvest them over these days of the 23rd and 24th, the day before Christmas, mm-hmm. and you'll have nice vegetables coming up there. Now, there's the new moon on Boxing Day at 7:45 in the morning in Capricorn. Good sign, Capricorn. It's a very fertile sign. Well, we don't plant on that day, of course, mm-hmm. but the moon enters Aquarius on the 27th and it's in there on the 28th and 29th. So you may as well say after you've had your festive season there of big lunches and dinners and things like that, just relax and just do a little bit of weeding and fiddling around in the garden. But you don't have to do any real work in the garden over those 27th, 28th and 29th days because the moon's in Aquarius and it's basically a no-no planting time. But you can transplant on the 30th and that's because on the 31st, the moon enters into Pisces, which is a very, very fertile sign. And we've got the new moon, which we had on the 26th. So the moon's starting to wax up now. And, of course, consequently, transplant on the 30th and you can plant above ground crops again on the 31st because that's the moon in Pisces, very, very fertile sign. And you can also plant above ground crops on Wednesday because the moon is in Pisces and the moon enters in Aries on Thursday the 2nd at 2 p.m. So you've got right up till 2 o'clock on Thursday mm-hmm. to plant above ground crops. So that's a good cycle. You've got a bit of mixture for this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the first quarter of the moon is in Aries on Friday the 3rd. So that's a no-no day. You can pot around the garden, but no planting at all. And neither do you plant on Saturday the 4th. But one thing you can do is save all your energy for Sunday. It's a great gardening day, Sunday on the 5th of January, because the moon is in Taurus, very semi-fertile sign, and you can do your above-ground crops during that particular cycle. So it's a bit of a mixed period. So you've got Christmas off and you've got the festive season for harvesting. You've also got opportunities there to do a little bit of cleaning up in your garden. But who wants to work over the festive season anyhow? Most people want to sort of sit back. But don't forget, that garden needs water. over the festive season, particularly if the weather's hot and there's no rain. So don't forget to give it a good water, and that way you'll still have your crops running into the new year looking pretty good.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the gardening side. But incidentally, Jenny,
yes,
what's the difference between Kim Kardashian and the moon? Well, I'll tell you.
Okay.
You have to put a lot more effort in to see the moon's backside.
Wow. Wow. Oh, Milton. Okay, fantastic. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Well, that was another great episode, Jen. I just want to rush out into the garden myself.
Oh, I'm not stopping you. Off you go. Adam, where can people find you?
They can find me in the garden, or they can look me up on YouTube. Just search Adam Woodhams and I'll pop up there, no problem at all, or on Instagram, of course.
And if you want more garden inspiration before the next episode, you can pick up the latest copy of Better Homes and Gardens magazine at selected supermarkets and news agencies.
So we'll see you next time, Jen.
You bet.
Bye-bye now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.